Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Saturday, environmental activists and those who care about the future of our planet will gather in Sacramento to tell Governor Jerry Brown and California lawmakers to stop taking money from big oil and to prioritize public health over industry influence. The rally takes place from noon to 3 at the Governor's Mansion in Sacramento. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. According to organizers, over the past 10 years, the oil industry has spent $260 million to influence California politicians, more than any other interest group. Now, this rally is happening as California lawmakers are being praised for their continued commitment to fight climate change, with some of the toughest energy regulations in the country and new goals to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Sacramento politicians say they're ready to take on climate deniers and the pro-drilling administration. But organizers of this Saturday's march say big oil spending has paid huge dividends for these companies, allowing them to quash or neuter any meaningful legislation that might significantly curb the power to drill and pollute. California is the third largest oil-producing state in the country. With the help of Governor Brown and moderate Democrats, the oil industry has been able to ease drilling rules, boost fracking, and undermine regulatory agencies. Joining me in studio today to talk about how the oil industry has reshaped California's political landscape are two guests. Sandra Steingraber is a biologist. Since she was diagnosed with bladder cancer at age 20, she's made it her mission to study and expose the effects of toxic chemicals and the effect they have on our body and our planet. She says fracking is a public health disaster. Her book, Living Downstream, an ecologist's personal investigation of cancer and the environment, was the first to bring together toxic release data with cancer registry data, and her book was turned into a documentary, and Sandra joins us in studio. Hi, Sandra. Nice to see you. Thank you for coming
Thanks
in.
Thanks for having me, Rose.
We're also joined by David Braun, co-founder and project director of Rootskeeper, a nonprofit that facilitates grassroots action and builds power. David is also co-founder of Americans Against Fracking. He recently relocated back to his home state of California from New York to fight fracking and toxic oil and gas practices. And David also joins us in studio. Hi, David. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, Rose. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I should mention that Sandra and David were part of a mass movement in New York that led to a statewide fracking ban there in 2014. We did invite the Western Petroleum Association to join us, but they declined. In 2015, the Western Petroleum Association spent more than $10 million lobbying California lawmakers. It's the oldest trade group in the United States, and they spent more than any other interest group. Well, let's dive in and talk about money, because it's such an interesting time. California lawmakers are making national headlines for saying that they're resisting Trump and they are going to pass the strongest climate change legislation in the country. And then you look at these numbers, and according to you and the organizers, in the last 10 years, the oil industry has spent $260 million to influence California politicians, more than any other interest group. David?
Yeah, and actually that number is going up. So last year, if you would look at, say, what would be 10% of 10 years or 1 year, you would think, well, that would be, you know, $20 million. In fact, last year they spent $36 million, so that curve is going up. And we know that it is buying some substantial rewards for them in our policymaking. Years ago, Jerry Brown, there was a study that was performed here in the state of California called SB4. Originally, that bill, when it was introduced into the Senate, was going to be a moratorium bill on fracking. And it ended up getting gutted, weeded down until it became a disclosure bill and a regulatory bill. A part of that was this study. It was going to be a landmark study. And in fact, they did perform 2,500 pages of science. So about 4 years ago, when this bill was passed, they said, this is going to be the end-all, be-all around fracking. We're not going to put a moratorium on it now. This was just before New York State banned it. Since then, Maryland has banned it. It's also banned in Vermont as well. And we're looking for other locations. But they said at the time that it was going to be this landmark bill. It's going to disclose all of the chemicals. We're really going to be able to track this industry. And once this is done, it will inform our policymaking around fracking. Here we are 4 years later. The study came out 2 years ago. Jerry Brown for many years says, this is going to be the deciding factor. All eyes are on this. Well, the study came out and it went. It did not change policymaking. Worse, there was some shady business that happened around it. So the regulations that were to accompany this report were actually released 9 days before the science came out, so that the study itself could not even influence the regulations. So it was definitely, in that case, putting the cart before the horse. How can you create rules around drilling if you don't even understand what the science is behind the drilling and what's going wrong with that drilling, right? The regulations are supposed to protect us from the things that go wrong. So for them to create regulations before the science even comes out is like, what's going on there? So, like, you know, strike one on the oil industry and their spending in our governmental bodies and capturing our regulatory agencies and our governor. Now, it's important to note that Jerry Brown was very much the Bernie Sanders of his time. Back in 1992, he ran for president in the Democratic Party primary against Bill Clinton. And at that time, he said he would not take any more than $100 from any one source. And that is my kind of guy. He was really stand up, and he was very openly talking about how money buys influence. And he said, am I susceptible to it? He said, you bet I am. And we have a video of actually him quoted saying that. Well, flash forward to Jerry Brown today, 25 years later, and Jerry Brown, in the past 6 years of being governor of the state of California, has taken $9.8 million for himself and his projects from the oil industry. And so a part of that was that actually Gray Davis, who, and this has been documented by David Baker in the San Francisco Chronicle, and it's been documented in the Los Angeles Times. Gray Davis, who at the time was the head legal counsel for Occidental Petroleum, which is the second largest oil producer in the state of California, called Jerry Brown and said, you have a couple of regulators, Alana Miller and Derek Chernow, who are really clamping down on us. And the reason being is because an oil worker had fallen into a pit of hot cyclical steam at the time and had passed away. He had died. When they pulled him out, he was fried. And so these two regulators stood up and said, this is totally unacceptable. We're doing our jobs here. And they did. Gray Davis didn't like it. Gray Davis calls Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown directs his staff to ask those regulators to cease and desist. They said absolutely not. Several days later, they were fired. Within months, Jerry Brown had received, for I believe it was his Prop 30 initiative to raise taxes, he received $500,000 from, I believe it was Occidental, and another $250,000 from Chevron. This is all well documented, and I welcome people to check out this story because it is eye-opening. So those two regulators were fired, and he replaced it with somebody people who would not regulate the oil industry so closely. And so this is the kind of behavior that we've seen supposedly from an environmental leader, a guy that talks about renewable energy and climate change all the time. And let me be fair to Jerry Brown. Getting 1 million electric cars on the road in the state of California is a big deal. Getting lots of solar in place is a big deal. These are things that are extremely important for addressing climate change. But we also have to address the worst polluters. What are the root causes of climate change? And for us to try to address the problem without actually addressing the problem and limiting the pollution, limiting the carbon emissions, limiting the methane emissions, the source for where climate change is coming from, and actually going up against the industry that is causing all that climate change, we're not actually getting the job done. And while everyone is talking, I mean, Jerry Brown is talking a great game about Donald Trump and saying there's no way we're going to allow offshore drilling off the state of California. But meanwhile, Jerry Brown hasn't stopped the offshore drilling in his own jurisdiction, which is extremely notable. And in fact, Jerry Brown's own policies are around fracking and oil extraction are far closer to Donald Trump's than they are a governor like Andrew Cuomo of the state of New York, who banned the practice. And so what we're asking Jerry Brown to do is to really reach back to his roots, really, as he's coming to the end of his legacy, do a little bit of soul searching. And if he says, you know, he is a moral upstanding human being, that we would ask him to really look and see what that means, and that you have to take a stand at some point. And you can't really call yourself a climate leader while you're taking lots of money from the oil industry and doing their bidding, plain and simple. And that's aside from the issues of toxicity. And so let me just finish this, if I may. So that study comes out, and it made very clear recommendations. The study that Jerry Brown talked about came out, and it said the recommendations were clear. Put science-based buffer zones around all oil operations, mm-hmm. and not just fracking. We're coming to find out that they're using a whole host of chemicals in operations that aren't fracking, and they're calling it regular drilling. And they'll say, we're prepping a well, or we are doing routine well maintenance. But they're doing routine well maintenance with hydrofluoric acid, which is extremely toxic. And they're doing that in places like Los Angeles, where children are living and breathing and going to school. And it's important to point out to the listeners that these are generally people of color, mm-hmm. low income, people that don't traditionally are affected by these sort of environmental justice issues. We see it happening all the time, and it's happening with this issue. And so here we have 2 years ago, very clear scientific recommendations were made by this independent study, 2,500 pages worth of science that was done by our state scientists. This study was supposed to be the study to decide policy. And here we have recommendations that say it's toxic to live near an oil well. We recommend that you have human health buffer zones around these oil wells, and none of those recommendations have been implemented a full 2 years later, which means that we've identified it as being toxic for our communities, and we are knowingly allowing that exposure to continue to this very day. What's the point of performing a study if you're not actually going to act on it? And how can a guy who calls himself a climate leader and a leader of the people allow this to happen under his own jurisdiction and his time of leadership?
David Braun is co-founder and project director of Roots Keeper, and organizers and people who care about climate change are marching on Saturday to tell Governor Brown and California politicians to stop taking big money from oil. David brought up a lot of things there. There's a really good article that goes into everything David brought up called Big Oil's Grip on California. It's by Michael Mishak, Center for Public Integrity in the Nation. You can find a link. It's a very long article and so eye-opening. Almost everything you talked about there is in this piece, and I hope people can read about it. Sandra, you focus on the science behind fracking and drilling. Why don't you talk a little bit about what David was talking about, this fracking study that came out a couple years ago? We've done a lot of shows about fracking. We've been trying to get detailed information about the chemicals that are pumped into the ground, and it's still pretty hard to get that info. But what does the latest science tell us?
Well, those of us who study the health and climate impacts of fracking are in the middle of a big torrent of data that we're trying to keep up on. And it's really clear that fracking, as well as a lot of the other extreme forms of oil extraction, because fracking is only one, and in fact, only 20% of the wells here in California are fracked, but there are a lot of other dangerous drilling practices that require other kinds of toxic chemicals as well, and that there are both public health impacts as well as climate impacts. So those of us who went to the Paris climate talks, and Governor Brown was also there, it became clear that the task before us was a twofold one. We need to leave the fossil fuels in the ground at the same time we open the door to renewable energy. And we need to do this very rapidly to avoid catastrophic tipping points to our climate, which also then become terrible public health problems. Mm-hmm. So it's really a twofold task, to close the door on fossil fuels and open the door on renewables. And what we see here in California is only one of those tasks being done. Mm-hmm. So we are grateful, in the those of us who are in the scientific community, to see a political leader like Jerry Brown breaking the silence about climate change and embracing the science. But actions speak louder than words, as our mothers always taught us, right? And so even as he's getting electric cars on the road, even as he's deploying solar panels, he's keeping the door open to the fossil fuel industry. And that not only keeps oil flowing out of the bedrock of California, it keeps a gusher of oil money flowing into Sacramento, both to the governor's mansion and to the legislature. And so the result of that is what exactly, as David described, the science on the harms of this very extreme and dangerous oil drilling are being held hostage. We have very good data about the harm in California, but that data is not being threaded through the needle of the law and being turned into good policy. In fact, shockingly, some of the worst drilling practices happen right here in the very allegedly green state of California. For example, California is the only state that allows unlined pits full of oil wastewater to just dot the landscape, which threatens the drinking water. Mm. There are no setback requirements, as David pointed out. In a place like L.A., where you have a big oil deposit directly beneath one of the largest cities in the world, means that if you don't set back the drills from where people live, you're exposing millions of people. And it turns out that your chances of living within a quarter mile of one of these very toxic drilling operations is not just random. 90% of the people who live very close to drilling operations are not white. Mm-hmm. So there is an injustice that breaks down across racial and class and economic lines.
It's interesting to read about how the oil industry is specifically targeting politicians who represent communities of color. And we'll talk about that later in the show. But I wanted to first talk about what you said, the wastewater. And again, just to reiterate, California is the third biggest oil producing state behind only Texas and North Dakota. I'm thinking a lot of people might be surprised by that. And according to the story I mentioned earlier by Michael Mishak of the Center for Public Integrity, over the past 30 years, the state of California has allowed oil companies to inject wastewater into nearly a dozen aquifers that were supposed to be protected by federal law, some of these containing water clean enough to drink without treatment. Half of the more than 2,500 suspect injection wells had gotten permits since Jerry Brown took office. In a preliminary review of the riskiest sites, the state shut down 24 wells, saying their operation poses danger to life, health, property, and natural resources.
Yeah, and to put a finer point on that, a year ago, when a report and a study had come out about how 91% of what is injected into the ground in the LA Basin, that Dogger, the Division of Oil and Gas and Geothermal Resources, didn't know 91% of what was being injected there. The very same day that this report came out that slammed the Division of Oil and Gas and Geothermal Resources, Jerry Brown appointed a 30-year veteran of the oil industry to be head of Dogger and the regulatory agency that oversees the oil industry for the Bakersfield region. So it's gotten to the point where there's hubris here, that it's almost like, you know, there's a sort of an untouchable quality to this, is that words are all that matters, and actions, as Sandra said, don't really have any bearing in it. And we have entered this place where you know, it's clearly, you know, a guy like Donald Trump is doing some pretty egregious things. But we also must acknowledge that while there may be, you know, a murder going on down the street, somebody's walking out of the back door of the 7-Eleven and nobody's talking about it with half of the merchandise of the store. But meanwhile, presenting a facade as if nothing was going on. And so it's really, really important that we weigh everything equally and hold people accountable. So if you're going to call out somebody else, let's hope that you're also able to acknowledge not only your good deeds, but as a leader, some of the things that you need to actually be responsible to and accountable to. And that's what we're talking about now, is accountability.
David Braun is co-founder and project director of Rootskeeper, and Sandra Steingraber is a biologist and author of Living Downstream, an ecologist's personal investigation of cancer and the environment. And this Saturday, people who care about the planet and climate change are gathering in Sacramento at the governor's mansion to tell Governor Brown and California lawmakers to stop taking money from big oil. Last year, The oil industry spent $36 million to lobby California lawmakers. Over the last 10 years, the industry has spent $260 million. And we did invite the Western Petroleum Association to join us, but they declined our invitation. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. Again, California politicians are getting national attention for saying that they're going to resist Trump and really deal with climate change. So what are your thoughts on that? And what about what happens behind the scenes, the money that politicians receive, the quid pro quo deals that are struck? If you also, if you live in a refinery town, if you live in Richmond, right across the bay, you're living right by Chevron. So what has your experience been like with that industry, that corporation? If you work on climate change or environmental policy issues, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Sandra, as someone who lives in New York and was so involved in the movement, which ultimately led to the banning of fracking in New York in 2014, what are your thoughts about what is happening here in California? Because a lot of people don't know what's going on behind the scenes and the money that the oil industry is spending and what the industry is getting in return.
What I learned in New York over the years of fighting fracking there is that as a biologist who was bringing the science to our political leaders, you know, as expert comments, giving testimony in our state house, compiling memoranda to be read by the governor, by our health commissioner, by our environmental commissioner. What I learned was that science alone can't speak when it goes up against the fossil fuel industry unless that science is carried into the political arena by an informed citizenry who demands that the science on the harms to climate and to our air, our water, our food supply, children's health, that it's citizens that have to insist that the evidence for harm be determinative for what our policies are going to be. And so I think what was behind our victory in New York was not only taking the science to political leaders, but taking the science directly to people. So a number of us in the scientific community and the medical community spent a lot of weekends for years speaking in church basements and rotary clubs and town halls, just laying out the evidence for harm. And as we did, you know, when we began, there were only 60 studies in the peer-reviewed medical literature on the risks and harms of fracking. By the time we won, there were more than 500, and now there are more than 900.
Oh, wow.
And so one of the things that we did was compile that data into a compendium of findings, and Concerned Health Professionals of New York then keep updating and releasing new editions. I bring that up because we were so shocked the last time we reviewed the data to discover that some of the strongest evidence for harm and some of the most egregious practices happen here in California, that we separated out the California data into its own special section. Mm. So people can go online and take a look at that data for themselves at concernedhealthny.org, concernedhealthny.org, or simply Google Concerned Health Professionals of New York, and you can read it for yourself. And I'm very eager, and that's why I came to California, to bring this data before the citizens of California, so when they do things like get in touch with their political leaders or go to the governor's mansion, they're bringing the good science with them. So really, I'm interested in how science carried by not just the scientists, but by a big movement of citizens can really prevail against the fossil fuel industry, who, after all, fossil fuel party is over. and so that's the message coming out of climate science. It's the message coming out of public health. It has to be over. So we can't allow the governor to cheer for essentially like a long-distance swimmer who's trying to get to the far shore of renewable energy when the fossil fuel industry has tied a ball and chain around the leg of that swimmer, right? You can't cheer for the swimmer and the ball and chain at the same time. The governor and the legislature really have a choice to make, and it's a mutually exclusive choice. You can't promote renewables and wrap yourself in a mantle of green and still take money through the back door from the fossil fuel industry.
Sandra Steingraber is a biologist and author of Living Downstream. David Braun is co-founder and project director of Rootskeeper. And this Saturday, citizens who care about the future of our planet and climate change will gather in Sacramento to call on Jerry Brown and California lawmakers to stop taking money from big oil and to prioritize public health over industry influence. The rally takes place from noon to 3 at the Governor's Mansion. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. Although the lines are filling up real fast this morning, 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at the show's website. Set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Thanks for your support to KLW's May campaign. When we ended the on-air drive on Saturday, we were $55,000 away from our goal of $400,000. Now you have cut that short to just $21,000. This is the last day for your contributions to count toward the campaign. If you have already given, thank you. If you'd like to help us make that final push to the goal, please give your support today at kalw.org, and thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of the growing political chaos in Washington. I'm sure you've heard by now, but according to the New York Times, a memo by former FBI Chair James Comey says Trump asked him to end the investigation of Michael Flynn and his ties to Russia. We'll be following that. We'll also talk about the FCC Chair Ajit Pai's plan to kill net neutrality. According to reports, the FCC first vote on this is happening today, so we'll be following that. And if you see any stories about net neutrality or about what's happening in Washington, you can email those to us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Stories, I should say, that stand out. Today, we're talking about big oil's influence here in California. On Saturday, citizens who care about the future of our planet and climate change are gathering at the Governor's Mansion in Sacramento to call on Governor Brown and California lawmakers to stop taking big money from big oil and to prioritize public health over industry influence. According to organizers, just in the last year, the oil industry has spent $36 million to lobby California lawmakers. Over the past 10 years, the industry has spent $260 million. We did invite the Western Petroleum Association to join us. They have spent about $10 million in 2015, but they declined our invitation. We are joined today by Sandra Steingraber, a biologist who was diagnosed with bladder cancer at the age of 20. She's made it her mission to study and expose the effects toxic chemicals have on our bodies and our planet. And you can check out her book, Living Downstream. It was also turned into a documentary. David Braun is co-founder and project director of Rootskeeper, a nonprofit that facilitates grassroots action and builds power. And David and Sandra were instrumental in encouraging New York's governor to ban fracking back in 2014. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Frank and El Cerrito. Hi, Frank. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I wanted to make two quick points about this issue, one of which is about fracking, and that is that, yes, the toxic flammable chemicals that they use to frack through these oil wells are nasty, and so is the fact that they consume each of those wells, and there's thousands of them in California. Each of those wells consumes 1 million gallons each a year. So in a state where water is a shortage, water shortage is an issue, that's an issue in itself. The other point I wanted to make was that on Wednesday, May 31st, the Bay Area Air Quality Management Board is meeting to discuss Refinery Rule 1216, the other side of the game here. The oil is pumped out of the ground, but it's got to be refined. And what they're talking about doing, what they've been doing on a larger and larger basis, is pumping this this high sulfur crude out of the boreal forest, which they strip mine to get it in Canada, and then bringing it to the Bay Area, which has the five main refineries that can deal with this crap. And so the Bay Area Air Management Air Quality Management Board is meeting on Wednesday, May 31st, to decide on Refinery Rule 1216, which will prevent that stuff from being brought here. And if we can get that passed, then from what my understanding is that there's only one or two other plants, one in L.A. and one in Washington.
Where is that meeting, Frank?
It's being the meeting itself is at it's the Bay Area Air Quality Management Board meeting to discuss Refinery Rule 1216. The vote will be on Wednesday, May 31st at 9:45 a.m. at 375 Beale Street in San Francisco.
Okay.
And Suite 600.
Thank you. We will find a link and put information on the website about that. Before we get responses, we have another call about air quality around fracking. Let's go to Denny in Richmond. Hi, Denny.
Hey, good morning, Rose, and good morning, David and Sandra. Denny Larson with the Community Science Institute.
Hey, Denny.
Hey, great work, you guys. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about, you know, the lack of real air monitoring that occurs, and Sandra and you have referred to the amount of toxins that have come from previous studies, and I was a primary author of a peer-reviewed journal article a couple of years ago that was used in New York on the ban with Dr. David Carpenter. But, yeah, it's just ridiculous, the lack of monitoring. We've helped communities in the Central Valley and Bakersfield do their own using our simple buckets. But there's a lot of advances. And here in Richmond, if you go to the website richmondfenceline.org, as I am right now, you can see some real-time data. For example, in Atchison Village, which is a low-income people of color area, right now people are breathing ammonia, black carbon, which is very fine toxic soot, hydrogen sulfide, hexane, PM2.5, and toluene. And by going to that website, if you live in that area or you have concerns, you can actually see what you're breathing in five-minute averages.
Wow.
And that's the kind of thing that's possible. We have three stations that use laser beams to surround the major units, and then we have three trailers in the community. Because if it misses the laser beam, it goes up and over, we catch it in the trailer.
I'm trying to find this website, Denny. Richmond Fence Line?
If you just Google Richmond Fence Line, thefenceline.org.
Okay. Oh, fence or defense?
Fence Line.
Okay. If you can email that to us at feedback at Your Call Radio, that would be great. Thank you so much for calling, Denny. Sandra, before the break, you said that when you were looking at data, fracking data in New York, some of the most egregious data that you found was coming out of California. Can you tell us about some of that data?
Yeah, and I want to thank Denny for being such a great role model for how citizen scientists can really collect really good data and serve as really the kind of forewarning for the scientific community by going out and it's almost like guerrilla data collection, but some of the best data we have on monitoring air comes from the work that Denny and others have done. So thank you, Denny.
And that website is fenceline.org.
Yes.
Yes. There's no Richmond in it. Fenceline.org. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, I think that the first caller made a good point, too, that there's a kind of false narrative I see in California that's blocking us from really seeing the real data that lies underneath. And that narrative kind of goes like this, that if we don't want bomb trains coming from the Bakken or from Canada's tar sands into our refineries, then we need to blast the oil out of the ground right here in California, almost like it's local oil, like local food or something, and it's better than bringing it in from somewhere else. But the science doesn't show that. What the science shows is that California's oil is just as dirty and carbon intense as the tar sands oil. It's some of the dirtiest and most carbon intense in the world. And also, it doesn't anymore just flow freely out of the ground. We you know, those gushers of bubbling crude, we burned through those a long time ago. So to get the remainder out of California's bedrock requires all these extreme, very toxic technologies, which do contribute to the kind of air pollution that Dennis is talking about. And there are health risks and climate risks all along the way, from the moment we put the drill bit in the ground to extract it, all the way to the burner tip and to the refineries, including places where we store it, such as at Aliso Canyon in the Porter Ranch community. And in that case, we had empty holes left over in the ground from that created by a depleted oil field that we're now going to shove compressed methane, which is natural gas. And, of course, the blowout in between October and February 2016 led to the largest gas leak in American history and created a terrible risk for the people who are sickened by breathing it, but also by the climate. And so we have good data on Aliso Canyon. If the oil and gas industry had its way, it would simply reopen this before we get the scientific investigation done. So again, it was really citizen action together with science that has so far held off the reopening of Aliso Canyon. And I want to give great credit to the folks at Save Porter Ranch and others down there who are really championing the science as citizens that have held off turning those holes in the ground back into infrastructure for the gas industry until we can get the science finished on what actually happened and how people were sickened.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Denny. Let's go next to Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Hi. I just want to mention that it's not only the fossil fuel companies, but also the financial institutions like the banking and underwriters like TD Securities and Goldman Sachs and the J.P. Morgan Chase. All those different financial institutions are actually doing a bait and switch strategy. While we're concentrating on divesting from fossil fuel companies, these same fossil fuel companies are getting their money from banking institutions, which our pension funds are also heavily invested in. And as a member of my union, UPTI, we passed a resolution at an annual convention to seek divestment from University of California, to seek divestment from Energy Transfer Partners, DAPL, and the companies that are financing these projects from our University of California retirement plan. Yesterday, there was also a meeting at CalPERS regarding getting them to try to divest from coal, as well as the fossil fuel equity stocks. And so we're seeped in oil, and we need to start really, really moving our money. We need to get our money out of these financial institutions and apply pressure so that that money will go into healing the earth and healing our communities and public health.
Thank you for calling, Lisa. What about that point, David?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I think it's really important to look at the many different ways in which these institutions work against us. Clearly, also, we've seen that was a little bit of the instrument that have expanded fracking, that there was a lot of speculation. It raised the prices of it was just basically a way for instruments for folks to make money. And in fact, we see the oil industry operating that way now. So when the price of oil dropped out, they continued drilling here in the state of California. Why? Because the amount of reserves that they estimate becomes something they can count on their balance sheet and affects their stock price. And so it's all of these various instruments that are interlaced, which allow folks to basically make money off of the further expansions of fossil fuel and the destruction of our planet, which is a serious, serious problem. And if I may, I was on the Democratic Platform Committee last year on behalf of the Bernie Sanders campaign, and was really awestruck by some of the things that I saw happening there. Literally, people on So I was there representing the Sanders campaign. There were a lot of folks that were there representing the Hillary Clinton campaign. And there was a consultant for the gas industry that was writing environmental policy on behalf of Hillary Clinton. He's sneaking in language that was talking about laying pipelines as a solution for climate change. Expansion of fossil fuels is not a solution for climate change. It is shackling us to more fossil fuels for years to come. Because when you lay pipelines, you want to build power plants. When you want to build power plants. If you spend $750 million on a power plant, you want to get your money's worth. That's not a 5-year or 10-year power plant. That's a 60-year power plant. And guess what? That power plant has to be powered by fracking. And so that means we're going to have to continue expanding fracking all across the United States. And that means more poisoned water, more ruined lives in this country, more land that has been destroyed by these practices, and more communities that have been disrupted. And, you know, I think it's really important to tie that back into why we are in the situation we are in right now. So people are talking about, you know, Donald Trump, that this is a big problem. You know, how on earth did this happen? And the reality is that all studies point to that the Democratic base stayed home. Why did they stay home? Well, we saw it very clearly. Hillary Clinton was talking about, I'm going to rein in Wall Street, while she was taking millions of dollars from Wall Street. I'm going to rein in the fracking industry. Well, like the very next day, she had the fracking industry in the state of Colorado held a $600,000 fundraiser in her name. And she's saying, I'm going to regulate it so closely that it can't be done. But meanwhile, she was taking money. And so which one was it? And people smell that, that disingenuous behavior. Mm. People don't like it. People see right through it. We're not dummies, especially the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. And I can tell you what I saw is all of this money was infiltrating their operations, so much so that they were willing to side, and they being essentially the Clinton campaign, was willing to side with Republicans and conservatives because they didn't want to embrace our side or the progressive wing that was calling for an end to money because it was the money that had brought them there. And so rather than embrace some of our principles, rather than to start calling for money out of politics and integrity in politics, they were willing to shun this, all of this progressive wing of the Democratic Party that had this revolution happening, all of this huge excitement calling for the end of money, and they turned their backs on us and said, you know what, we'd rather appeal to conservatives that are more business friendly, that want to disregard regulations. So really we had a choice of like more of the same versus crazy, and people were like, well, more of the same isn't motivating me, so they stayed home, and guess what, crazy won. But the good news is that we have an opportunity now with the Democratic Party. Our Democrats control the state of California. That's why we're marching on the Democratic Convention on Saturday in Sacramento, because we need to send a clear message to the Democrats that we don't want this money infiltrating party politics anymore. If you're going to be the party of the people, act like it. And we're calling on them to swear off this money and to no longer be embracing these kind of say one thing and do another sort of policies. The bottom line is this, is that my personal belief is that Trump is pretty much on his way to ruin everything. We're seeing it happen. House of Cards is falling down. And we need to be ready when that happens with a solid movement, people-powered movement, not run by the corporations, but by the people, so that we can actually, when that falls down, we can actually come in with real policy, real solutions, sane leadership, and actually come in and make some lasting, substantial changes. And the reason why is climate change is about to wreck the planet, and we can't have more of the same. We can't get another Democrat in there that's taking money for the fossil fuel industry and saying that they're addressing climate change. That's not going to cut it. Sea level rise is real. This contamination, the acidification of our oceans is real. Life is hanging in the balance, and now, as is if ever, is the time to show up, turn out, stand up, talk to your legislators, go into their in-district offices, come to Sacramento on Saturday, go to our website, oilmoneyout.com, show up and be a part of this movement that's going to save the world. Because as Sandra says, if science isn't working with advocacy, we're not winning.
I want to ask you, we only have about 5 minutes left. I want to make sure we do not end the show without talking about this, because I think it's really important. You mentioned Democrats, corporate Dems at the federal level. And as you mentioned, Democrats control the Senate and the Assembly. They have a supermajority here in California. And according to this piece by Michael Mishak of the Center for Public Integrity, with environmental advocates concentrated in the largely white rich enclaves on the coasts, the oil industry wooed moderate Latino and African American lawmakers from urban and rural districts where energy firms tend to operate. These communities are choked by pollution, but also have some of the lowest voter turnout rates in the state. Since 2012, the energy industry has made a full court press for moderates, showering more than $12 million on their campaigns and the outside groups dedicated to their elections. This block of votes, the so-called Mod Squad, is often an impediment to climate change initiatives. So they're targeting Black and Latino lawmakers who represent people, some of the people who are most impacted by these policies. Sandra or David, can you talk about this? Sandra?
Well, it's a cynical strategy, right? Because we've already seen that people of color and low-income people are at the receive disproportionate harm from these same industries. So it's all risk and no benefit for them. So I'm sure the oil and gas industry sees this as a necessary step, because if those folks were mobilized and the story about the environmental injustices, the way in which non-white people and poor people receive more nosebleeds, more exposure to carcinogens, more asthma, more low birth weight babies who have least access to health care. If that story came out, it would be devastating. So I'm sure they see this as a way of doing what they need to do.
And Sandra, the industry, according to this article, is pitting communities of color against wealthy white communities living by the ocean, basically saying that they don't care about your jobs. And so when this legislation comes up, we hear that it's about jobs. And so therefore, these Democrats that represent these communities of color tend to vote with industry. How did you deal with that in New York? How did you reach out to communities of color?
Well, it's the same script that they take off the shelf and try to, customize for every state that they operate in. But what we say in the public health community is that take a look at the data. These jobs are killing jobs. If you work for the oil and gas industry, your chances of dying on the job are actually twice that of a police officer, seven times that of other industries. And we're talking about horrible things like crushing industries, head injuries. We have workers who are exposed to so much benzene at their job site that their urine contains so much benzene that we know can lead to leukemia. Those are the kind of levels that we know. And so the gas and oil are going to eventually run out. The jobs are going to run out. Whereas renewable energy now is really the jobs driver, far more jobs being created in renewables, and you're not going to get blown up. And it's going to last forever, and you're not going to carry toxic chemicals home on your work clothes and expose your children, expose your partner through your bodily fluids and so on. And so we can do better than offering jobs that kill people. It's a false choice.
And I do want to just add that they have picked off a number of legislators, and they've really gone to the right folks and really given them a lot of money and really funded the like Black and Latino Chamber of Commerce and things like that. But we also see folks like Kevin De Leon, who's the Senate pro tem, who has really taken down the industry squarely, or folks like Holly Mitchell from Los Angeles, who also have, she introduced a moratorium bill. And so while we are seeing that kind of divide and conquer strategy that the oil industry is trying to play on communities of color, basically getting their elected leaders to vote against the conscience of what's going on in those communities in terms of public health, we also see a lot of really fantastic leaders that aren't really taking that oil money and are standing up for the right thing. And so we really want to empower those leaders and really call out the ones that are doing some shady shenanigans.
And speaking of jobs, the New York Times had an interesting story in April. Today's energy jobs are in solar, not coal. Solar, 373,807 jobs. Wind is now topping 100,000 jobs, whereas coal is 160,000. Hopefully we can turn some of these coal jobs into renewable energy jobs. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, right? Sandra, we're almost out of time. I want to make sure we talk about solutions, because when we talk about the environment, I mean, there's so much bad news. But what about solutions? Can you talk about some of the changes that you would like to see at the state and the federal levels?
Well, in fact, listeners can just go right to the website solutionsproject.com. And some of our finest scientists, including some right here at Stanford, Mark Jacobson and others, have come up with the solution that is specific to each state. So how we can rapidly get off of fossil fuels and pursue a full bore affair with renewables. Obviously, the mix of the kind of renewables you want in the state of Maine is going to look different than the state of California or Arizona or New York. But there is a solution. It's backed up by good science. It shows how we can capitalize it. It shows how the health cost savings and shows the number of people employed and so on. So the people should take a look. But what we're going to Sacramento for on Saturday and marching for is to say that all those solutions right now are being held hostage by the flow of money going into the governor's mansion and into the Sacramento State House. And so we're really engaged in a hostage rescue mission mm-hmm. on Saturday to say that we've got it. We've got the solutions. And Jerry Brown knows what they are. But as long as the oil money and the gas money keep flowing into the political system, we're not going to be able to enact those solutions. So, and I think anyone who's listening to this program can hear that David is the extrovert of the two of us, and I'm a little bit shy. But when we're all coming to Sacramento to say that the government's job is to take care of the well-being of the people, and we're gonna we the people want you to do your job.
Sandra says she's shy after spending 3 years weekends for 3 years in churches and various groups across
against my temperament
in New York talking about fracking, and you were all successful. I mean, a lot of fracking activists in California, I'll never forget that day. They said, "Oh, we thought we'd be first, but New York beat us." That was incredible to see that governor banned fracking in 2014 in New York.
Well, Governor Brown needs to pay attention to that. If Governor Cuomo sees that his political future lies with being the climate hero, we're glad to let him wear that mantle. But Governor Brown, you can't wear the mantle of a climate hero when you're being bankrolled by big oil.
And not to mention, just really quickly, we were told by experts, quote-unquote experts, in the state of New York that we would never ban fracking, that we were so naive. You can't go up against the strongest industry of the world and actually win. And lo and behold, 5 years later, after we were hearing those things, we won. So people will say here in the state of California, oh, you can't, you know, kick out the oil industry, but we can. It's time that we believed and just moved on with the future.
David Braun is project director of Rootskeeper. Sandra Steingraber is a biologist and author of the book Living Downstream. It was turned into a documentary. And citizens who care about the future of our planet are gathering at the governor's mansion in Sacramento this Saturday from noon to 3 to tell Governor Jerry Brown and California lawmakers to stop taking money from big oil and to prioritize public health over industry influence. And you can find more information about the rally and also everything we talked about today at yourcallradio.org. David and Sandra, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having
us, Rose.
Thank you.
And coming up tomorrow, it's our weekly media roundtable. We'll be talking about coverage of the growing political chaos in Washington, D.C. We will also talk about FCC Chair Ajit Pai's plan to kill net neutrality and the rise of right-wing media. That's tomorrow at 10. I hope you can join us. Your Call is produced here at KALW. If you'd like to listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thank you for joining us.